White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 362.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and John, we won a football game on Saturday. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer, and I'm happy also that we won a football game.
We won. Yeah, it's amazing how I didn't think I would be celebrating the win over Ole Miss that much, but I guess we really needed it the way things had been going, and it was a pretty definitive win. The third quarter, which is historically Gus's worst quarter, was the quarter we really seemed to put everything together. It was almost like they knew that, and they decided to make a kind of a special effort to go completely against tendency and actually show up after halftime. What did you make of that?
There's been a couple other games when we played better in the third quarter, but part of those games especially was we were so putrid in the first half that it was relative. But this game, no. I mean, I think the offense, when you say play better in this third quarter, you're talking about the offense. And traditionally, we have had a lot of stinker offensive third quarters, and the offense was really good coming out after halftime, and that's what you want to see. You want to see them make adjustments and get players in a position to succeed, and that's what it looked like happened.
Well, we know the players felt like Gus was more riled up than usual. Oh, by the way, I'm going to forget to mention this, but so I want to go ahead and mention it now, even though it takes us out of the topic thread for just 1 second. But did you see Deshaun Davis's comments?
I
thought that was really good, what he said. Basically, he said to the effect – I don't have it in front of me, but what he said, Deshaun Davis, our linebacker, what he said was words to the effect of he was glad that Auburn fans are unhappy because that means we're not complacent, that we want to win. We demand that Auburn win, and he'd rather have fans, you know, and supporters that want to win than those, as he said something like, you know, I'd rather have that than fans that are like, yay when we win and oh well when we lose, you know. And I agree completely.
Yeah, no, I mean, they get it. He gets it. Like, fans care, we want to win, and they appreciate that because it means we support them. We want, you know, but they know that. The team knows, just like we know, that they didn't play their best football the last couple of weeks, and they came out Saturday and played a better football game.
Yeah, it's just good to know that at least some of them know that when the fans get down on them, it's not because we hate them or anything. It's because we really want them to do well, and we feel like they're not living up to what we think is their potential. And there's a difference. There's a big, big difference, you know, I think. And he understands that. It's the demanding excellence, you know.
Absolutely. No, I think that's the right way to – it's about the difference between potential and achievement, and clearly they haven't played to their potential in the last couple of weeks, and they played closer to that on Saturday. So
yes, I agree. So, by the way, also, I've got to mention that for next week's show, we're going to have a very special guest on a separate segment that we'll be recording earlier. I won't tell just who it is yet, but it's pretty cool. Pretty neat thing. It's different time of the day, so John won't be on, but I'll be handling the hosting duties for just that one little segment. But I think you guys will enjoy it very much in a timely fashion too. So we beat Ole Miss. We won an 11 o'clock game. That's pretty, and we look good in an 11 o'clock game. It's like we completely went against every tendency we have. We looked good in the third quarter, and we looked good in an 11 o'clock game. I'm not quite sure that was Auburn and not some other team wearing white on Saturday.
I think 11 o'clock games away from home may be better.
Yeah,
I don't have any numbers to back this up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well.
I don't have facts to back this up.
I was slow on that, and all I can do is
blame yourself.
That's right.
All right, so let me ask this question for you. Did this game change anything for you and how you feel about Gus and his future at Auburn compared to where you were a week ago?
Well, it didn't change anything. It kept it from changing for the worse. In other words, if I was at level X, whatever number that is, let's just pick a random number and say that I was at level X with Gus going into the Ole Miss game, I am still at level X, whereas if we had lost to Ole Miss, I would be at level Y or level Z. You know what I mean? In other words, it didn't make me go, oh, everything's fine. It didn't make me go, oh, this is great. It just made me go, okay, it's not even worse than it was on Friday. Does that make sense at all?
It makes sense to me.
Stop the bleeding. Stop the bleeding. Didn't do any healing.
I think it did, you got a long way to go to do healing, but yeah. I think the fact that they won this game and we still have Liberty means we're going to go to a bowl game no matter what. And I think that was gigantic. I mean, I think that not going to a bowl game would have made, you know, would have been,
it would be a losing season.
Yeah. Yeah,
it would have been 5-7.
Losing season, coming off the preseason promise of beating Washington would have been a real disaster. And I think people would have really, you know, pushed a lot of chips into the table to try to get rid of Gus at that point. I am skeptical, regardless of what happens in the rest of the games, that anything is going to happen with Gus now because we're going to a bowl game. We'll see. And there are lots of things that can happen between now and then. And like you said, there wasn't healing, and we got a long way to go for that. But I just think this is me in my mind, not any kind of inside information or anything else, but I saw a team that played really hard for Gus, and a lot of players that were playing injured, you know, on their own volition, making a bunch of plays. Because they care about their teammates and, you know, wanted to win, and the fans wanted to win. And I think that, you know, to me, I'm skeptical that you could turn around and spend $20 million or whatever to get rid of a coach. You know, even if you say this team underachieved, that's fair. That's accurate, I think. I think it would be tough to spend $20 million to get rid of a coach to got this team to a bowl game.
Yeah. So. No, I think even if the rest of the way, we're going to lose to Alabama, we're probably going to lose to Georgia. Did you see the numbers about Texas A&M's defense that I tweeted this week?
I did.
They have the second best run defense in the country. Even after playing Clemson and Alabama and somebody else.
Alabama doesn't run the ball that much anymore.
Yeah, well, that's true. But still, I mean, that's pretty remarkable considering they were like 70th last year.
It is good, and it goes back to what I said about that defensive coordinator. That guy's good. He's a good coach. They will be prepared.
Yeah. So assuming that we go 1-3 the rest of the way and end up, let's see, what are we right now? 5-3 with four to go?
Yes.
So that would be 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, just like 2015. Well, we kept Gus around after 2015 at 6-6, so we keep him around again. And I'm assuming the buyout goes down after 2019 at least a little bit, right?
Yes.
Okay. Not a lot, but it'd be less than it was now. So... yeah, I'm thinking he'll be around for at least another year. But I keep thinking, you know, Georgia is a program where their fans made fun of us for firing Doug Barfield, quote, too quickly, unquote. Remember Louis Grizzard wrote a whole column about how horrible and evil and mean Auburn was to fire Doug Barfield. And then they turned around and fired their coach before Rick'd, Donnan, J. Jim Donnan. They fired Jim Donnan after he took to Georgia. He took Georgia to a bowl game every year and was about 8-4 every year at worst, and they fired him after about 5 years. So Gus is currently on the Jim Donnan track, it seems like to me. Go to a bowl every year, be like 8-4 every year, and still get fired after a number of years. Does that track with you?
It's a little more roller coastery. I can't remember the exact records in the Donnan years. This seems more roller coastery than that to me.
Yeah,
the,
Georgia was literally like 8-4 every year under him.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Florida maybe one time, and you know, would lose to us, lose to whoever else, and lose to Tech a couple of times. But that's what that reminds me of, is a coach that goes 8-4 every year, except that Gus has had, you know, a 7-6 and now whatever 6-6, and if we go to the Belk Bowl or something and play like a, I don't know, Wake Forest or some team like that, whoever's 6-6 in the ACC or whatever conference goes there, I don't even know.
UVA.
Oh, hey, well, we had a nice bowl win over them in 2011, which was the next to last time we won a bowl game. The last team we beat in a bowl game was Memphis. The last P5 team we beat in a bowl game was Virginia in 2011. And then another thought that occurred to me today is Oregon is starting to get good now, and we open with them next year. I was hoping for the crap Oregon of the last couple of years. So, of course, they're going to get real good now that we're getting ready to play, because that's what always happens.
But two things about Oregon. One is that their quarterback, Justin Herbert, is projected to be the top quarterback taken. And today he said he was planning to come back to school.
Oh, goody.
and somebody said today online, I can't remember who it was, said Jay Jacobs was really good at identifying teams that were going to be good in 5 to 10 years.
Yes. Oh, he was the master.
It's impressive.
Yeah. God,
he should be betting long futures in Vegas or something. I don't know.
He needs to. Who's he working for now? Florida?
Florida.
Okay. So I guess Auburn come back on Florida's schedule in like 5 years and we'll be good. That's awesome. We need to make this work for us. We need him to go to like Notre Dame in 2 years and then schedule Auburn for 7 years from now. That's what we need. I wanted to run through some quick statistics. All right, I brought up the page. This is Statistical Leaders. Here's the first question I have for you. How far down the receiving yards, season receiving yards total, do you have to go in the SEC to get to an Auburn receiver? What number is the first one?
15th, 20th?
20th. Darius Slayton is 20th with 332 blazing yards. Ryan Davis is 22nd. Seth Williams is tied for 25th. Anthony Schwartz is 35th because he's been running as much as receiving. And in fact, a good chunk of Anthony Schwartz's 262 yards was one play. Rushing. Jatarvius Whitlow is actually 6th now in the SEC in rushing, and actually has one of the top yards per carry at 6.3. But what that means is if Whitlow could just average 100 yards a game the rest of the season, we'd have another 1,000-yard back. The problem is he's not going to average 100 yards the rest of the season. I think he's going to need to get, especially against Alabama and A&M, I think he's going to need to get about 350 of those yards against Liberty. I mean, maybe that should be the game plan. Maybe we should just go ahead and say, look, we're going to lose those other three games. Let's just run Whitlow every play against Liberty and get 400 yards in that game and then let him sit out the rest of the season and recover.
That's nice.
It's not going to happen. But, I mean, maybe that's what we should shoot for, right? So, and that's the rushing yards. The second Auburn player on the rushing yards list, there's Whitlow at sixth in the SEC. The second Auburn player on the rushing yards is 28, Cam Martin. 73 carries, 272 yards, 3.7 yards per carry, and one touchdown. And a long run of 19. That's just terrible. I've said all along, I feel like they're just not using him right. They need to be using him as a flare out of the backfield pass catcher. You need to get him in space. You don't just the way they're using Cam Martin is the way that what's his name that we hated in 2012? Richard III.
Oh, the offensive coordinator?
Yes.
Loeffler.
Loeffler, right, Scott Loeffler. They're using Cam Martin this year the way Loeffler used Ontario McCaleb his senior year in 2012. Just running him up into the middle, into the pile. He can't do that. That's not his game. They need to be getting him into space on the perimeter, like they were doing Devin Barrett last year. But they're not even trying.
I'm okay with it. I think if we had those carries or those passes, I'd rather give them to Shivers or whoever.
Yeah, well. Oh, and that reminds me, what about the Asa Martin debacle? Now, you mentioned that last week, right? And then it turned out to be true.
We didn't play him. But,
I mean, he played in five games.
He did play a fight. We're not redshirting him, and we're not playing him.
They were going to redshirt him, and he pointed out to them, well, coach, I played in five games. And they're like, what? I mean, that's just inexcusable. That absolutely boggled my mind. Yeah. They went to him and said, we're going to redshirt you. And he's like, but I played in five games. And they're like, what? How do they not know that? You've got to be kidding me. I mean, you said that last week, and I'm like, oh, really? No, that came out this week. It actually happened. I was on the floor. So if that's the case, why do you not play him?
Yeah, I don't understand. Again, like, what, you know, we should be in the fourth quarter of that game, we should have been playing him.
Yes. I mean, if the coach is screwed up that bad and they have to, you know, he's only got three more years of eligibility, why not use him? You're just burning a year of him now for nothing. You're just setting fire to a year of his eligibility for no reason.
But it's more than that, because to me, like, it's after Whitlow, I don't trust anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, Shivers is nice, exciting, change of place, shiny toy kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if Whitlow was hurt against Georgia, who can you give the ball to for 20 times? And to me, the only guy on the roster you could do that with is Martin. So you have to get him some carries now. And they didn't do it.
You know what they'll do, though? If Whitlow can't play, they'll alternate between Cam Martin and Shivers, and we'll get negative 1.5 yards per carry average. I mean, they'll each get like one good run, and they'll each get stopped behind the line of scrimmage, and then they'll go for no gain, and it'll average out to negative 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have somebody like a Whitlow that can get you the tough smash through the line, you know, positive yardage every now and then to keep it, you know, possible for those other guys to get there to do their thing. I don't understand. I just don't get it. You want to hear the passing real quick, just real fast. Depending on the statistic, Stidham is not that horrible, not what we expected, but in terms of yards for the season, he's sixth with 1714. And only eight touchdowns. That amazes me. Guess how many touchdowns passing Alabama's quarterback has?
I don't know, 30?
25. Stidham's got eight. Guess how many interceptions Alabama's quarterback has thrown?
None.
That's correct. Stidham's thrown four. Eight touchdowns, four interceptions, 16 sacks. 16 sacks. That's right behind the LSU guy and the Texas A&M Kellen Mond. who actually has more yards than Stidham. Kellen Mond has more yards so far than Stidham. Oh, Kyle Shermer at Vanderbilt has more yards than Stidham.
Mm.
That's just not good. Oh, but hey, Jake Fromm doesn't. I don't know how. He's only thrown the ball 99 times. He must have been out some.
No, they just don't throw the ball a lot, and they play their second quarterback some, and they don't ask him to do a lot.
I guess not. All right. Well, anyway, I just want to throw those statistics at you. Okay, so let's see. What about the Auburn offense in the Ole Miss game, real quick? Anything else? I mean, Whitlow was great.
Whitlow was awesome. That was his best game by far.
Mm-hmm.
He was explosive in the open field. He ran away from people, and then a couple times in the open field, like, guys had a beat on him, and he literally faked people out and gave really good moves. He showed patience. Yep. He showed some power. I mean, it really was his best game by far. And then we went to the other freshman. We gave the ball to Shivers 10 times in that game.
Yep.
Which was a season high for him. Schwartz didn't touch it as much as he should have, but he had some big plays. And then also his presence in the game opened up things for Whitlow. There was a play at the goal line where we ran, Schwartz across the formation. Like we were going to do the handoff to him on the speed sweep, and all the linebackers and the safeties on that side ran with him, and that opened it up for Whitlow to just go straight ahead. We threw a big pass to Seth Williams down the seam. So the other freshman wide receiver who hasn't caught a bunch of passes,
Seth Williams.
No, Shedrick Jackson.
Oh yeah,
had a couple. He is actually turning into the replacement for Nate Craig Myers as the really good blocking receiver. He made some really on some of those big runs. He was downfield knocking guys out. We do have to say this about Whitlow: if he crosses the goal line again, hanging the ball out in the air, I'm going to drive to wherever they are, and I'm going to. His mom's not going to be the only one he's got to worry about. His mom needs to get on him about that. So he did it one time and, reaching out when nobody was around him and basically dropped the ball, but they'd already called touchdown. And then the second time he did fumble, and then he got hit, but Schwartz was there to recover it. So he needs to both hands on the ball until the ref signaling touchdown. He's handing the ball to the ref 10 feet deep in the end zone. I don't want to see anything else.
Let me have a word real here with Mr. Whitlow. Jatarvius, if you're listening, I know you're a big listener of the show. Jatarvius, I just need to say, your nickname is Booby. Everybody loves that nickname. Everybody thinks it's hilarious. It's great. Don't make me change your nickname to Jatarvius Mario Fannin Whitlow. All right.
He literally is going to have to give heart medication to Auburn fans. He's going to have to subsidize
the medical treatment. Yeah, because we're all going to have strokes watching him. I'm like, I was screaming. You've got to be kidding me when that ball came out, and it was clearly not even across the that one wasn't even. I think the other one was a touchdown, maybe, but this one was clearly not going to be a touchdown if Schwartz hadn't done his best.
Was it a Romishodu or Obamaya?
Yeah. It was a Romishodu that caught the pass, and you know exactly the game I'm talking about. A Romishodu caught it and went to the end zone and fumbled, and it was It was
Courtney Taylor.
Courtney Taylor, yeah, that went down there and recovered it. That's right, Courtney All World Taylor. Man, he was great. But hey, Cam Martin did have 4 carries for 18 yards in this game. So, but what about Malik Miller out there scoring touchdowns? All he does, John, all he does is score touchdowns
and catch long screen passes.
Yeah,
I was fine with it. It's a good role for him. I'm excited that they're actually, they have a big back with some power. They're using because it's again. We talked about the problem with red zone offense, and you saw that, and this is one of the ways they're doing it. is by using Miller around the goal line, and I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about our Wildcat?
I'm not fond of that right now. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. The Wildcat is great. You have to throw the ball out of that formation at some point, because right now, as soon as the ball snapped to Whitlow, every defender on the field is running to him, all 11.
Yeah.
And they're ignoring the wide receivers. They're not doing anything else. They're running straight at Whitlow from every angle. And he has to just snap. They have to snap the ball to him. He has to stop and just chuck it down the field to somebody.
Yep.
And
even if it's not even close, at least make the defense think about that.
But I think like somebody's going to be wide open because the cornerbacks and safeties are running straight at him. So all they need is a wide receiver to take about 10 steps and turn around. And Whitlow just has to throw the ball in his direction. So it doesn't have to be super accurate, I think. I think it'll work. But if you don't do that, I think the chances of that play, you know, working right now are very low. I just think the other thing is, you know, you have to do that and then run the speed sweep out of it or whatever. Like that's, everybody's on Whitlow. He could do the handoff that way. But otherwise, I think he's not as good at it as Kerryon was or some of the other guys we've had. And it's not very effective right now.
There's three things that play does, supposedly. One is if you pass out of it, it surprises people. And two is if you do the sweep or something. But the thing it's really supposed to do primarily is put more blockers at the point of attack. The problem is if your offensive line can't block worth a flip to begin with, then having extra not blocking blockers at the point of attack doesn't help. Okay, and this gets me to my other. So there's no point in running it because it just nullifies itself. It nullifies itself.
If your offensive line is losing their one-on-one battles, then it doesn't matter if you got two extra blockers blocking the extra defenders. So.
It doesn't matter, right? And then plus it also pulls defensive players in and makes it even more clogged up. You might be better off just running four wide like we did a little bit and then running out of that. We kind of opened the game, I thought, with some four and five mm-hmm. wide formations and ran out of that. And that was, well, it couldn't be five wide or you wouldn't be running out of it unless not Stidham. But anyway, the other thing you said that I thought was interesting was you're talking about how Whitlow showed more patience. And I was going to say, I think that part of that is he was able to show patience because this defense we could block. We haven't been able to have patience because there hasn't been any time before this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody said that the Ole Miss defense is the cure for the common offense. And, I mean, that's a big part of it. You have to be careful how much you take from this because the situation we're in this game is not going to come up many more times other than maybe once, you know.
No, it's fair. And I do not expect us to perform at that level, against the good SEC teams we're going to play. But I do think having a good outing on offense was important for this team psychologically.
Yeah.
Like they needed to believe that good things can happen. And I think you saw that performance translate to the defense, for example. I thought they played better in this game than they had in the last two games mm-hmm. against a much better offense.
Yeah. It seemed like they had just decided they were going to contest every receiver and not let them. I mean, if they had to take the penalty, they were pretty much going to do it. I thought Ole Miss should have used LSU strategy and just kept doing that.
Yeah.
I think Ole Miss made the mistake of saying, you know, oh, we're not completing those passes. Let's do something else. LSU said, hey, let's just take the penalty over and over and over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, you're right. I want to be clear about this. Like that, the Ole Miss offense, like in the advanced stats going into last week, was the third best offense in college football, period. Behind Alabama and Oklahoma in some order, okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the first half, we put, you know, the whole game, we didn't have our best cornerback. Jamel Dean did not play at all. He's going to play against Texas A&M. And the first half, we didn't have Denson because he was out for targeting last week. So we were just out, you know, two experienced, talented guys in our secondary, and we held one of the best offenses in the country to 6 points in the first half. I thought that was outstanding defense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great defensive performance. Absolutely. That needs to be mentioned. And then the special teams, I mean, I said to my wife, I said, hey, we've blocked like two field goals. And they like, this was like Auburn's sixth field. I'm like, whoa, I've missed a few. We've done amazing. And I was happy for Nick Coe getting defensive lineman of the week or whatever, but I thought that Davidson was the one that really was amazing in this game. They both were.
I mean, Coe had a really good pass rushing game, but Marlon Davidson was awesome.
Yes.
I mean, he was really, really making a difference. And he's got, I mean, he's blocked a field goal in each of the last three games.
Yes, amazing.
So, I mean, the SEC record is 6 in a season by a Kentucky guy a few years ago, and he now has 3. So
he's starting just a little bit to be Nick Fairley-esque out there. Just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. Yeah. I don't hand that out every day, but, you know.
That's true. He's making a huge difference. So I think the defensive line as a whole stepped up their game this week. They have not been difference makers, and they were difference makers in this game.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to the special teams for a minute. Larry Porter, we have to give him some credit, because last year Tim Horton was coordinating special teams, and they were bad. And this year, you know, Larry Porter took over. I think the punt returns are better. I think the coverage is good. Mm-hmm. I think the blocking is at, obviously the best it's ever been at Auburn. I think the special teams are excellent. I mean,
and then there's the kicking, the field goal kicking situation.
All right, I have to talk about this. I may have been really sarcastic and angry during the game, and I said that, like, there are 12-year-olds playing Madden who make this calculation better than our coaching staff, particularly Gus, does during the game. Like, it's not – the math is not that complicated, okay? It was 4th down and 2 yards to go. In SEC games, Ole Miss was allowing, like, 6 yards a play. Okay, and we were averaging like 5 yards a play up to that point in the game, and Gus elected to try, you know, a 49-yard field goal or 50-yard field goal or whatever, which we've seen Anders Carlson struggle with recently. I think he's actively hurting Anders Carlson at this point, these long field goals.
Yeah.
I think it cannot be good for the kid's confidence to have him miss a long field goal on national TV every week. But it's also like, so the math works like this. The percentage chance that Carlson makes that field goal now is like 10%. And the chance that we get 2 yards on Ole Miss's defense is about 70%. So what are you doing? Like, and I get it. The season hasn't gone the way you wanted to. So we've all forgotten about that. We're going to be aggressive and go, you know, go, go, go thing from the beginning of the year, which was they were trying to carry over the thing from the LSU game last year, but if we're on, you know, and we have talked about this offense is really good, like between the 30s,
right?
And this week it got past the 30s and you know, and made touchdowns, but a lot of the other games it's kind of stalled around the 30 yard line, and that's why we end up with these ridiculous long field goals. But this, we can't do that. If we're on the other side of the field, if we're at their 30 and it's less than like 4th and 8 or whatever, we need to go.
And
regardless of the score or whatever else, like, we don't need to try any 49-yard field goals or longer again, unless it's like the end of the half or the end of the game. That's the only time that I'm interested in doing that.
My understanding is that the holds and the snaps haven't been great this year. And that affects Carlson a great deal.
It could. I haven't spent a lot of time looking at the holds, because every time he does it, I have no confidence it's going to happen. And every time I see it, like, shank off to the right. So,
yeah. Yeah. I still believe that Gus thinks it's a different Carlson. I think he just doesn't know it's not the same guy. And he's like, well, I don't understand. He's been so good the last few years. Why is he suddenly missing? I don't understand it.
I think he gets in that indoor practice facility. He's making him from 70 yards. Yeah. And Gus is like, doesn't matter how long it is, we're sending him out there.
Oyich, Gus.
See, how many people got that?
We'll see. I need to put that. See, that's a soundboard sound I need to put on here. I've got a note to add some stuff, because I keep getting in trouble that I haven't added the Schwartz. Your Schwartz.
You're gonna hear about that one.
Yeah, and I gotta add. I gotta add the Gus thing too, because that would be funny. All right. It's time to refresh the soundboard. There's only there's only so many times that I can say.
And I say you.
And you're like, yeah, yeah. That's so 2016. You know, I gotta get some fresh stuff in here.
Fresh material, like some movie that was made in 1950.
So.
But James, I need you.
So does England.
Hey, Alan and I just reviewed that movie, and we're posting. I'm posting the show in the next probably 48 hours. It takes a little post-production on the Bond shows. But yeah, on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, Alan Porter and I, Bond expert Alan Porter and I, just reviewed. We're working our way through the whole series, if you don't know. So go subscribe to that. We're up to The Spy Who Loved Me, and we recorded it last week, and I got to get it up this week. So let's see. Any thoughts quickly on A&M before we get into the second half of our show here? I know it's a week. I think we'll have an abbreviated show next week. We're gonna have a little interview, and then maybe you and I can just do a few minutes around that, just to kind of preview A&M.
What I would say is that the good thing for us is we have a bye week to rest up and heal up, and there are many players who are banged up and really need it. I mean, Marwin Davidson played that game all week. He was in a walking boot and left the stadium in a walking boot and played that way. Wow. Despite that. So, so A&M has to go to Starkville on Saturday night and play Mississippi State. That's going to be a physical game for them. We'll get to use that as kind of a scout A&M, you know, see what we think about them, watch them again. But also I think two road games in a row is tough. They'll be physically beat up a little bit. Regardless, even if they beat Mississippi State, I think Mississippi State's defense will beat them up some. And I think that's good for us. I like that. Mm-hmm. So we can talk some more next week about the specific matchups and stuff. But just the situation of it, us having a bye week and being at home, and them coming off of playing a physical road game, I like that. And then you know, they said today it's either going to be the 11 a.m. game or the 3:30, 4 o'clock game, whatever. So we can hope for the afternoon slot.
Well, I like the idea that we can see if Mississippi State can run on their defense.
Yeah, I mean, LSU really shut down Mississippi State last week, and maybe at home Mississippi State will do better. But I'm not holding my breath a lot for them.
All right, let me see. We've got to quickly thank our patrons. So let me hit this button and see if this one will work for it. Okay. Here are our current patrons who help keep our program on the air. This one's not doing it for me. How about there we go. These are the patrons that keep us on the air, and for only as little as a dollar a month, we appreciate as much as you can do. You can join this group. I've got to say, John, I'm just tomorrow mailing out a whole raft of books that I had left over from my conventions this year, and I offered them to our patrons for only the price of postage, and they snapped up about 8 of them immediately. And so I'm going to be mailing out 8 free books to patrons tomorrow, just as an extra added bonus for people that on our patrons list that wanted a free book. And I've still got a few left, so if you become a patron this week, I'll repost, and you'll have a chance to get a free book for just like $3 postage. So here is our current list. We have to, of course, thank Brendan O'Dwyer for what he has done to help us out so much. I'm going to continue thanking him through the rest of the season. Then we have Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, Brandon Sisson, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer. I'm seeing several names that I've sent books to, that I'm sending books to this week. Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, Ronald McCollum, and Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, And Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our other one-time and anonymous donors, plus one-time donors such as the awesome Surfer Chickify. I have one on there more than once, so I'm going to quickly... No, I don't. Just look the same. All right. So, yeah, all you got to do is click this button. All you got to do is go to www.auwishbone.com. www.auwishbone.com. There's a big button that says Become a Patron, and you can join in the fun. By the way, there's only three races left in the Formula One season, and our Formula One league is getting close to the end. Guess who is currently leading our Formula One fantasy league?
You.
Mira. Our teams each have cool names, and her team name is awesome. Her team name is Miracedes AMG Patronus, because there's Mercedes AMG Patronus. So she's Mercedes AMG Patronus, and she has Lewis Hamilton, which makes a huge difference, obviously. So she's killing us with that. So I recently acquired, in a trade, I acquired Max Verstappen, who was finished second at the U.S. Grand Prix on Sunday. So that was awesome. So you can jump in on our – if you get in by, like, March, you can join in our Formula One Fantasy League with several of us that are on there. It's a lot of fun. It really is cool. Okay, yeah, one other thing real quick. Patrons also right now are getting to comment on which Auburn games they want John and me to cover in our upcoming book. Our next book is going to be – it's going to involve very consequential Auburn games – of the last, 35 years or so. And so we are actively asking the advice and suggestions of our patrons. So if you are a patron, you can go on the Patreon website, or you can send us a message or an email and give us suggestions of the games that we should take into consideration, and we will certainly do so for the book. So see, there's lots and lots of benefits. You get discounts on stuff, and you get to do the power poll, which we're going to come to in just a second. All right, so before we get into listener questions, we have this week's superhero matchup metaphorical feature from Jared, the yard sale artist, Albrick. So let's get what Jared has to say about the Ole Miss game. Hey, I messed it up. Sorry. There we go.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade, with your Auburn University superhero battles. Let me start off by apologizing for not getting a battle in last week. I was what the French call le depressed, and I think you know why, but I will make it up to you. Instead of focusing on who Auburn was last week, I want to focus on who Tennessee was last week. In the realm of superheroes and comic book characters, Tennessee was really J. Jonah Jameson. Not a lot of power, not a lot of ability, but really scrapping and fighting to make everyone give him some respect because he just has been down for so long. So you'd think, hey, we could beat that. So Auburn came in as Aunt May. And while Aunt May does try her hardest, she just couldn't overpower that scrappy J. Jonah Jameson. Now, with that bit of depression out of the way, let's get to this week's superhero battle. This week, Auburn actually looked a little bit strong, with a little bit of fierceness and a little bit of agility. So I'm going to say Auburn was the Beast from the X-Men. Furry blue beast with a splash of orange running up and down the field, and that was nice to see. Ole Miss looked like Kraven the Hunter, classic Spider-Man villain who has a lot of determination and is on the hunt for some more wins and some more trophies, but just didn't quite have the ability to defeat the power level of someone like the Beast. So, good job, Auburn, on a much-needed win. Look forward to doing another one of these soon. As usual, I'd like to give a quick thanks to Pat DJ Christados Sampson, who does all of our editing and feeds and waters and trains our eagle that we use for our final sound clip. Speaking of which, back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
I'm glad they're feeding that eagle because it doesn't sound happy. I'm not sure. I think they're keeping it locked up in a cage and poking it with a stick every episode. Oh, that's good stuff. I hadn't thought of the Beast versus Kraven. That would be a fun story. I'd like to read that now. All right, so I think at this point it is classic. It is always the time for me to push this.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. I really enjoy that, the new listener questions audio there. So what do we got this week?
All right. Our first question comes from Reynolds Wolf.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
God, I love that so much. I love that song.
All right. Reynolds has one of his usual excellent questions. He says, with the USS Gus Malzahn listing, smoking, drifting rudderless, and taking on water, after catching hell from an LSU Tiger torpedo, MSU Bulldog broadside, and a UT volunteer volley, the tender mercies of a win over Ole Miss and a sorely needed bye week are allowing our crazy ship to enter port to both refit and reflect. This has been one of the longest first halves of a season I can remember. Painful at times, certainly frustrating, and sadly, perhaps worst of all, so painstakingly familiar. We've all felt these winds of inconsistency before. Dye, Bowden, Tuberville, Chizik, and now Malzahn have all had their ebb and flow of ineptitude, mediocrity, and misery. Though I give Gus more of a pass than, say, Bowden or Tuberville, few programs in their time are playing recruiting like Auburn's biggest rivals today, Alabama, Georgia. So knowing that the Tide and Bulldogs are performing at another level, what do you think is acceptable for Auburn's fan base to currently expect from their program, whether Gus remains the coach or not? I'm certainly in the minority. In a world with Saban and Alabama, I would be extremely happy with, on average, 9-4 seasons, provided the team always plays hard, can compete with our two biggest rivals, beating Alabama and Georgia once every 3 years, again on average, and winning more than half of our bowl games. I'd want to be competitive in the SEC West with a chance of winning the division or conference title once every 5 years. In a world without Saban, as John assures us one day that blessed time will come, my expectations for greater success will increase. I hope this makes sense. Would love to hear your thoughts, Reynolds.
I totally agree. I think he's absolutely right. We've gone through our schedule before and picked out how many times out of five we should beat each team. And, I mean, the issue that I have is that we're behind the curve on some of those. Like, we currently have a losing record against Mississippi State over the last 7 years. We're 3-4 over the last 7 years against Mississippi State. And I've always said, against Mississippi State, we should be 4-1 every 5 years in my world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should be 4-1 against Ole Miss, and it's really 4.5 to 1/2, really, against Ole Miss. Georgia, I'd like to say that we should be 3-2. I hate to say we should be 2-3, but honestly, lately we've been 1-4, verging on 0-5 against Georgia. And I mean Alabama, well, we beat them in 13-17, so that's 2 out of 5, that's not bad. We've actually done about as well as you can do against Alabama. Nobody's done better than we have.
No, not.
Nobody. But on the other hand, you know, we've messed around and looked bad at times against Arkansas or against LSU or against, you know, it's hard to imagine that the Gus's two wins over LSU were beating the snot out of them at home in 14. And that last-second miracle save in 16. And if that call doesn't go our way for the clock running out in 16, Gus would only have one win against LSU.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I totally agree with what Reynolds is saying. I know that you know, from conversation with Reynolds, he really wants Gus to succeed, and he and I agree on that. We both like Gus and want him to do well. I just worry that I'm just starting to get to the end of my rope is all. And I don't feel like I'm being that unreasonable. You kind of have to temper hope and encouragement with reality. And I worry that I'm getting to the end of my rope, you know?
Let me give you some more rope then. Okay. Can I do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 100% in the realism thing. Like, I want to look at the evidence, but I mean, we're frustrated with this season, and we think this team is underperformed. We've lost three games, and in two of those games, we should have won the game and screwed around and lost it. Mm-hmm. And the other game, we played badly. Mm-hmm. How many games during Gus's tenure? Well, I have two things. One is, how many games during Gus's tenure do you think we've lost to a team that was worse than us? Like, definitively worse than us.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd have to really look at it. I mean, because we've lost quite a few games, particularly in years like 15 and this year. But, I mean, I think there have been more of them this year than usual, right? I mean, Tennessee was definitively worse than us. I don't know about LSU anymore. Maybe not. I mean, LSU's a top four team right now.
I would say the evidence says they're probably not worse than us.
And yet we came within one play of beating them. How crazy is that?
We should have beaten them.
I know. We should have beaten them, and yet they're a top four team. Right now they're a playoff team. I don't know if they're going to end up that way. I mean, Alabama's going to beat the snot out of them. But I'm just saying, right now we lost to, you know, a top four team, and barely. And I mean, if you look at where the teams that we've played and are going to play are on the schedule, right, are on the top 25 list right now, it's there's not a lot of teams that aren't on there. I guess Tennessee, pretty much.
So, I mean, I've thought about this, and I went back and looked, and to me, like, the two games that I go back and look at that if I want to fuss at Gus Malzahn about are the Tennessee game, mm-hmm. and then, like, the the 2016 Georgia game.
Yes.
Where Kerryon and Sean White were banged up.
Oh, my God.
Like, that was a bad Georgia team in Kirby Smart's first year, and we should not have lost to that team.
That game.
So, I think those are the two losses I think that so, having said that, this team is underachieved, okay? It is not. This is not a terrible football team.
No.
Okay. It's not a bad football team. It's a good football team that we expected to be a very good football team. It isn't. You know, we expected it to be an excellent football team, and it's not. It's just a good football team. And, like, for example, I was looking at I referenced Bill Conley's advanced stats in here a few times. They look at drives and plays and who you played against and how well you did in all of those drives and plays. And they literally don't look at who won and lost the game. They just look at how well the team played. But they kick out, like, the garbage time parts of games when it's already over and decided. And in those rankings, Auburn is the 17th best team in the country. Adjusted for who we played and how well we played in all situations.
Right.
So is that what we wanted? No. But I would tell you that Texas A&M is 18th.
Wow.
So, you know, in his numbers, in his statistics previews for the future, he gives us a 56% chance to beat Texas A&M at home.
We'll see.
I know we'll see, but I'm just saying, like, the larger point I was trying to make is that I think this team has a lot of talent. I think recruiting has been at a high level and is going to continue to be at a high level. And I think if you handed me the trigger, I would say, no way. I'm not firing Gus right now. I mean, I think I agree with his expectations are very reasonable. I think what Reynolds said was very reasonable to me.
I'm still grappling with what you just said that I had not actually processed before in one thought. I've thought about it in different pieces, but never at once together, which is that we lost to the 2016 Georgia team and we beat the 2017 Georgia team.
That's right.
That's insane. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, that was a really good question, Reynolds. We appreciate it.
It was good. All right, next question is from Wade, who emailed us at auishbone@gmail.com, and he says, guys, so it looks like we have to threaten Gus with his job now before every game, I guess. He says, but seriously, how much and to what do we attribute this win? Was it more a function of Gus letting Chip devise the plan and call his game, or pride and eventual great effort on the part of Booby, Marlin, Co., etc., or just Ole Miss not that good a football team? As always, you guys are a bright spot, even in a disappointing year. Thanks for all you do.
Well, appreciate that. We've heard that a good bit this year, and it really means a lot. I think it was a little bit of everything. It did seem like we were a little more prepared to get the ball out quickly this week than before, to have like some kind of a contingency plan other than just get sacked or throw an interception, and that was a revelation.
I thought the offensive game plan execution was much better. Stidham was more composed. They knew where and we threw the ball to the middle of the field some.
Where is Ryan Davis?
Well, I mean, Ole Miss's defensive game plan was we are going to cover Ryan Davis and the screens. That was their game plan in this game. They said, you are not going to beat us throwing that screen to Ryan Davis. That was what they took away.
Yeah.
And we said, that's fine. And we turned around and ran the ball with Whitlow and threw it to other people.
Yeah.
I think Stidham keeping it a few times helped open up some things. And I think the blocking was better. The guards, the offensive line as a whole play was better, but the guards have been really bad, and they were pretty good in that game. The wide receiver blocking was good, and I think we called some routes. There was a couple of slants in that game. It was crazy. I think it's also like Stidham looked more composed. You know what I'm saying? Like he didn't seem as rushed or concerned to me in this game. So there was a lot of soul searching and team meetings and all that kind of stuff, in the last week. And maybe some of that stuff got everybody to focus more. And I'm not sure about who was calling the plays now versus before, but clearly they changed a few things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll take it.
Yep. Our next question is from Scott Looney, who says, I think it's obvious after the Ole Miss win that this team is not 2012 and not even 2008. Feels a lot like 2007 to me, with a roster that has a lot of talent. We had some hard to overcome weaknesses in a few key places, a difficult schedule, and some frustrating close losses, including a carryover loss. Mm-hmm. Of course, that team got absolutely destroyed by the Soldier Boy Georgia game in a game that will probably look like this year's Iron Bowl. I wondered what team y'all thought this year's Auburn team was most reminiscent of. War Eagle Scott.
Yeah.
Is there an Auburn team you would compare this team to?
Well, I mean, 2015 is the one that's been coming to my mind. It's certainly not.
But that team was the quarterback situation on that team just.
Yeah. Yeah. Was not
floundered.
Well, because Jeremy Johnson wasn't what he was supposed to be, and then Sean White struggled with injury and everything, and between the two of them, we just had nothing at quarterback.
Man, I'm glad I didn't write a really big preview of how great Jeremy Johnson was going to be and put it in the War Eagle Reader.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't do that either. La, la, la. Hey, whatever happened to Sean White? Did he transfer somewhere? Is he playing? What's going on? Is he working at Walmart? I mean, I don't know.
I hope he's doing well. I have no idea.
I'd really like to know what he's doing now.
All right. Our next question is from – this is a good question, though. I'm trying to think about what team this one reminds me of.
Yeah, I like the 2007 because I wouldn't have thought of that. And I think of them positively just because I was at that Iron Bowl. That was the last Iron Bowl I got to go to. And we beat Alabama for the 6 in a row, And so I still have warm and fuzzy thoughts about that 07 team, if for no other reason than because they beat Alabama for the 6th time in a row. And then we went to the bowl game, too, and we went, in the Georgia Dome and saw them beat Clemson. So that team closed strong, and I have good thoughts about it. So I'd love for this team to remind me of 2007 when the year is over, sure.
All right, our next question is from Joey Miller.
Yeah.
who says, "Hi, John and Van. From my view, I saw a team that has not given up and is still trying, which is critical to having a chance during the stretch run.
Yes.
The zero turnovers versus Ole Miss made me the most happy. That's very critical for Auburn to have a chance down the stretch. The Auburn defense of special teams give Auburn a puncher's chance if there are no turnovers. On a scale of 1 being very little chance to 10 being an automatic win, rate Auburn's chances if we have zero turnovers against the remaining teams on the schedule.
On a scale of 1 to 10 with no turnovers against Texas A&M, I'll say with no turnovers against A&M, I'm going to say 6.5. What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to say with no turnovers, I'm going to say 7, but I like 6.5.
All right. Against Liberty?
10.
11. Liberty Hate Week. Hashtag Liberty Hate Week. It's coming. Let's see. Against Georgia.
With no turnovers, 4.
Against Georgia with no turnovers, I'm going to say 4.5.
I'm going to say 5.
Okay.
We'll learn a lot about Georgia this week against Florida.
Yeah, we will. And we'll get to that one in just a minute. And finally, no turnovers against the Cringing Toads.
11. you know, 3, 4, so.
2.
I mean, okay.
2. Fair. I want to say 1.
That's fair.
I'm going to be charitable and double it. We're not beating that Alabama team. That's just not going to happen. It won't happen. Ray Perkins, 1986.
Well, again, let's see when they go to Baton Rouge. Let's just see what happens.
Just once and for all with this fiction.
Mm-hmm. our next question is from Ken Ringer, who asked, will Jared Stidham go pro after this season?
Yeah, I think he will. If he's still considered a big pro prospect even after this mess, then why would he come back?
Yeah, I think, like, just watching the games, I'm struggling to see, like, I can't see an NFL team spending a draft pick on him. But then I read some of this stuff, like, from Trent Dilfer and these other people who had him, like, the 5th highest-ranked quarterback. So I think there's still a chance, a good chance that he goes pro after this year. So we'll see.
And I'm not as heartbroken about that as I was a couple of months ago. I mean, better, and he's a good quarterback, but I don't know.
I think he could come back, you know, he could do a thing where he comes back for next year and has a great, great season. So
I just feel like I've always felt like he was a square peg on this round hole team, and we've done what we could do with him, especially at the end of last season, but he just doesn't fit this offense, you know?
I think you saw against Georgia and Alabama, him on this team can work.
Yeah.
And I think it's the question of, we have to call the right plays and not try and force him to be the square peg.
No kidding.
Next question is from Logan Chilton, who says, I'm torn to what to believe regarding this team now. We obviously still have problems, but this team could have rolled over, and it didn't. Is it a matter of player coach leadership? Is it time to put our pitchforks and torches away? I do think there was definitely some leadership aspect to what we saw in the last week. I think the players on the team showed a lot of leadership in terms of getting the team ready and focused to play, playing at a high level in that game.
Yeah, I agree. I think they had to motivate themselves as much as anything, and I think they did. I think there are some good leaders on that team. I mean, you don't get Deshaun Davis's every day, and we're lucky to have him.
No, and he played a great game too.
Yes, he did.
We talked about the defensive lineman, and every week that guy's becoming more and more one of my favorite Auburn players ever. We need to look back at him, you know, like the great Auburn linebackers through the ages. Some of the Takiyo Spikes and James Willis's and Quentin Riggins and those guys. Like, he has just been a warrior back there. Travis Williams.
Yep.
All right. Our next question is from it's an email address, but he didn't put a signature. So he says, can we officially replace Clemsoning with Ohio Stating and also bump Urban Meyer off the future coach wish list? Oh, he says, still on the Gus bus, Darren Pyle. He says, save all that buyout money and use it to reduce tuition costs for our kids.
Yeah, that's a dang truth.
That. Yeah, you get to spend $50 million. Let's
do something constructive. Fund
some scholarships.
Heck yeah.
All right, last question comes from Rusty Owens.
Yeah, Rusty.
Who says, hey, just saw Booby Whitlow leads all SEC freshmen with 626 yards.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, yeah.
This means he only needs 375 yards to extend the streak of 1,000-yard rushers at Auburn, as Van pointed out earlier. While I do want the streak to continue, I also want Gus to stop his reliance on a single hot hand. Mm-hmm. If given the choice, would you rather have the streak ended, see Gus give other running backs a chance, or perhaps even open up the offense more and not rely on the running game?
Yeah. No, I mean, the streak is nice, but it doesn't get you anything. I don't want to kill Whitlow, drive him into the ground his freshman year. And I would like Asa Martin to play some and Shivers to play more. I mean, our strength at running back is not one great back. It's several really decent ones, and we need to use them.
Yes.
And use them in proper ways. Don't just run them all up the middle, but use them in ways that their particular talents are suited to. So.
Well, and I think we know this. Like, we need this – of all the players in the team, Whitlow's the one that needs a week off the most, probably.
Yeah.
And we need him to be healthy.
Yes.
For the, you know, for the home stretch. So, I think – I mean, obviously, he's going to play against A&M, but I wouldn't play him against Liberty. Regardless of the 1,000-yard thing.
Yeah, let the streak go if it's a matter of having him healthy.
That's what I'm saying. If he's slightly not 100%, I would not play him against Liberty. I'd play the other guys and get them a bunch of carries in that game and save him for Georgia and Alabama to give us a better chance to win. That having him healthier for Georgia and Alabama is infinitely more important to me than the streak. Like, I don't care.
Right. No, absolutely. All right, well, I think we will now.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
All right, so we have a power poll.
We do. And breaking the SEC into tiers, the bottom tier is pretty clear, and it's Arkansas at the bottom, then Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss, you know, slightly above the Arkansas bottom, and that's kind of the bottom tier.
Okay.
And then there's kind of a, I would say, going up from the top down, then Alabama's in a tier by itself, then LSU and Georgia are in a tier, kind of the second tier down, and then there's kind of a big tier below that that's like Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky. And South Carolina is on the bottom edge of that, and almost in the – and Missouri – it's, I would say South Carolina and Missouri are kind of in their own tier below that one and above the bad teams. So that big kind of middle-class tier, A&M, State, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky.
And we may be the worst of that group, although maybe we'll be a little better now. But there for a while, we were clearly the worst of that group, I think. If you want to be able to vote in the power poll, just make sure you become a patron, and then John will send you out the ballot every week. All you have to, it's really cool. It's a little electronic deal. All you do is just go in there and move the names around and put them in the order you want them in and click the button, and it's all done. It's a lot of fun. So I enjoy it every week, and so you can too. Just become a patron. Go to www.auwishbone.com. So let's see. Alabama beat Tennessee, and what's his name got to smoke a cigar?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
God,
the former Tennessee coach Jones.
He must feel like Butch Jones must feel like a champion of life after he did that. 58-21. Missouri beat Memphis 65-33. I'm glad they played a little defense in that game. Good God.
Yeah, it was Missouri. You know, any kind of interception return and a block to kick or something. And,
yeah,
but Memphis is a good team, and they're a dangerous. They're the kind of non-Power 5 team you don't want to schedule, to me, because they're actually dangerous.
What's Missouri's record now? Because we weren't thinking very highly of them, but they've won a couple of games, haven't they? Check
keep
on
going,
that.
And I will
yeah,
tell you.
LSU beat Mississippi State 19-3. I didn't watch that. That sounds like it was an ugly game. 3 points though. LSU defense is something.
Missouri's 4-3. And yeah, no, I mean LSU play great defense. Mississippi State's offense could do nothing, but Mississippi State's defense, you know, took it to LSU pretty good. So it was, you know, it was an ugly. I heard people compare it to it was like a bad Big Ten game a little bit. So
yeah, well, that's the two teams I could see, yeah, being that way. Kentucky beat Vanderbilt 14-7. And somebody said they just got the win; they didn't worry about how it looked, right?
So, mm-hmm.
So good for Kentucky. And they must be what 6-1, 7-1 now, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and they got Georgia in a couple weeks.
Oh, I want Kentucky to get it done so bad. I mean, I know it'd be better if we beat a one-loss Georgia, but still, I don't care. I'm all Kentucky all the way in that game. Can't stand it. Arkansas shut out Tulsa. Wow, Tulsa, how far down must you have fallen? Good Lord. In the Gus Malzahn Bowl. The Gus Malzahn Assistant Coach Bowl, Arkansas-Tulsa. Next week coming up, Vanderbilt at Arkansas. So Vanderbilt has another chance to lose a very close game to a crappy Kentucky's not crappy, but
if Vanderbilt loses that game, they're at the bottom. I'm just laying that out there.
Wow. Well,
and Arkansas's kind of improved the last couple of weeks. They're starting to get it together, I think. Not going to be – you know, I'm not saying they're – on the road to the playoff or anything, but I'm saying they are better than they were at the start of the year.
We've also got next week Florida versus Georgia, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, and the return of
my cold dead hands.
Lock of the week.
I'm locking up the Florida Gators to beat Georgia.
I like it. I like the call. I think it's a very even matchup, and I could see Florida winning the game. Absolutely.
I want to see Florida win, and I want to see Kentucky beat Georgia, and I want to see Georgia come limping into their game against us, a wounded animal, desperate with that wild look in their eye, and ready to be taken down. That's what I'd like to see. I don't want us to be how they get well. I want us to add to their misery, and they can get well against Georgia Tech to clear out the year as they usually do. Kentucky at Missouri. You got to think Missouri has a passer's chance there, but Kentucky should be able to grind it out.
Kentucky's defense is really good.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Texas A&M at Mississippi State, that's the tenderizer bowl for our game. We want Mississippi State to beat the snot out of A&M, at least in terms of physically, if not on the scoreboard, and loosen them up, tenderize that steak a little bit for us. And then who's going to win that game?
I want to say A&M's going to win, but I mean, Mississippi State's coming off a tough loss on the road. I'm just not sure. Can they throw the ball? I mean, I think A&M is going to be prepared to stop the run the way LSU did. And can Mississippi State throw the ball? And I think I'm going to predict something like this offense is going to be better down the road when they have a different quarterback. You know, they have somebody else running it who can actually throw the ball.
It's hard for me to fathom that about the only defense that couldn't stop Mississippi State was ours.
I know it.
How is that possible? Everybody else has shut them down, and we couldn't. It's just crazy. And then Tennessee at South Carolina. I'm going to go ahead and say I think Tennessee may not win this game, but they're looking better.
Mm-hmm.
They got a shot. Against Muschamp.
I can see it.
I think South Carolina might win by a field goal, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think Tennessee's on the way up. And did you hear Pruitt? I mean, I hate to admit it, but I've thought all along he was going to work out, and he was a good choice. I hated that they hired him because I thought he was going to actually get them straightened out. He said something to the effect of he told the players after the game something like, if you can't get it done or something, I'm going to go out and recruit 23 more guys that can play better than you or something like that. And the Tennessee reporters are like, he gets it. He's not out there saying, it's okay, fellas, you're good. You know, he's like, no, I'm going to replace your butts. And they're like, yeah, that's what we want to hear after all these years of saccharine platitudes. You know, they want to hear that. That fired the Tennessee people up. I don't blame them. I thought that was good.
I do want to mention, when we had the question about the potential replacement coaches last week,
yeah.
Who did I mention specifically would be my first choice?
Oh, I don't remember.
That would be Jeff Brohm of Purdue.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah.
And what did he do Saturday night? He kicked Urban Meyer's ass all over that stadium with a much less talented team. So.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
Wow, that's amazing. That's good. Yeah. Where did he come from?
It's good, except that the market is going to go now.
Yeah,
like the Louisville is going to fire Bobby Petrino to try to hire him. So the now I'm not saying like this is a reason to get rid of Gus. I'm not saying that. But if something happened and we did get rid of Gus, like we better push our chips on the table and go after him as soon as possible.
Man.
After that decision was made.
Wasn't he an NFL quarterback or something?
He played quarterback at Louisville, and then he was a quarterback in the NFL for a minute. But he's been an assistant coach under Petrino at Louisville for a while.
That's right.
And then he was the coach at Western Kentucky and now Purdue. So.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to be at Purdue long.
Mm-mm.
No. All right. Well, that gets us to the end of another week. Any final thoughts before we head into our off week?
Winning is better than losing. It feels better.
It's
better to do the show after we've won.
You know, I posted our episode last week, and the title was "Lying Prone Over the Fence," which was a reference to your little gif of the Virginia fan lying there. And I thought, with a title like that, and with everything else, our listenership, our downloads are going to go way, way down. Because they always trail off when the team's not doing as well. And we've been going right around 950 to 1,000 downloads, at least on iTunes. And that one's already almost 1,100. So I guess...
I think it was a really good episode.
I thought it was good. Well, how good the show actually is, people don't know until they hear it. And if they're depressed and don't want to hear it, then they'll never know, you know, that they missed anything good. So, oh, well, we'll keep doing them as best as we can, regardless of how the game comes out. And we'll just try to be realistic here and tell you what we think. We don't sugarcoat anything or make anything up. We just, that's the way it is, you know? That's how we see it. We'll
pat you on the back so you lay over the fence.
You lay over the fence. Now I got to come up with a name for this episode. Oh, well, I got a few minutes. All right, well, I think our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.